Welcome to the Chief AI Officer Podcast,
where AI meets leadership.
And here is your host, Sanjay Puri.
Welcome to the CAIO Podcast, where we delve deep into the world of Chief AI Officers, exploring their journeys, insights, and challenges in steering AI initiatives within their organization. I'm your host, Sanjay Puri, and today we are honored to have the pleasure of speaking with Nandan Thor, Head of AI at Palo Alto Networks, the global cybersecurity leader shaping the cloud-centric future with cutting-edge technology. Palo Alto is renowned for its continuous innovation, harnessing the power of AI, analytics, automation, and orchestration to address some of the world's most pressing security challenges. As the head of AI, Nandan plays a pivotal role in driving this innovation, ensuring that Palo Alto Networks remains at the forefront of cybersecurity while protecting our digital way of life. In this episode, we'll explore Nandan's journey, insight, and challenges he faces while steering AI initiatives. We'll also delve into his approach for leveraging AI for cybersecurity, the ethical considerations he navigates, and the future of AI in this ever-evolving landscape. Nandan, thank you so much for joining us today. For our listeners who may be unfamiliar with your work, could you please share a brief overview of Palo Alto, your role?
Absolutely. And I really want to begin by saying thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to speak about such a evolving, hot, amazing topic such as cybersecurity and AI within cybersecurity. So I'll begin with just a little bit about my background and what I do at Palo Alto Networks. And then I'm happy to deep dive into anything that comes up from that. So I have now been at Palo Alto Networks for almost 7 years, and I've really jumped across a bunch of different AI and data science domains. So starting out actually working in the marketing domain, applying AI there for instance, with using AI to determine who to target for certain products, looking at things like leads that come in, how do we route them using AI, looking at things like marketing attribution. If a deal closes for a certain amount, how do you break that up into certain activities? And as we all know, AI is not a new field, right? While it's massively come into importance and burst onto the scene a year and a half ago, it's been around since the 50s, right? With Alan Turing and Turing machines and all that sort of stuff. So I'm super happy to see this massive resurgence of AI. And there's no coincidence that as compute power becomes more readily available and cheaper, that AI is really coming to the forefront. And that sort of leads to what I do today, which is as head of AI, I set the AI strategy for Palo Alto Networks, and I apply AI across the enterprise. So looking at things like, how do we apply AI to make our software developers as productive as they can be? How do we reimagine marketing and creation of content using AI? How do we continuously and completely disrupt the customer service aspect of our company and really tear everything down and put AI at the forefront and at the center of it? So that's what we've been up to for the past year or so, and what my role as head of AI is.
That's fantastic. Nandan, as discussed with you before, we have a global audience.
Yes.
Large number of AI experts, people who are in this field, looking to be in this field, people who are, you know, your colleagues, as well as people who are looking for figuring out their career opportunities. So the perspective of this podcast is ability to inspire others who want to be Nandan. Second is for you to be able to attract the best talent to come in to Palo Alto Network. And then finally, collaborate with your colleagues, lessons they can learn from you, lessons you can learn from them. So that's where our discussion is going to be. So you talked a little bit about, you know, what you do and how you came about. And one of the questions that was asked was, what is a typical day in the life of Nandan as people who want to, as I said, grow up to be Nandan?
Yeah, that's, I would caution anybody who wants to follow down this career path. It's super exciting, but it's obviously very busy, and I wouldn't trade it for the world. But I'll touch a little bit on what my everyday, on what my day-to-day looks like. A lot of it is really meeting with stakeholders and figuring out, as this sort of AI hype cycle comes down a little bit, how do we think about AI as a tool to achieve business goals and not just as the product itself? And so a lot of that is really working with business stakeholders and thinking about how do we define AI to drive value for different functions and really hone in on where's the activities and projects that we can do that actually drive value for the company and use AI as a tool to achieve those. So that's a large part of my day. Another large part of my day is actually still staying technical. So I meet with my team and we discuss the current trends that are happening, these new research papers that are coming out. How do we integrate all of these amazing innovations and groundbreaking techniques into what we do every day? And then a big part of it is also around mentorship. So I do have a pretty large team. And for me, the most important thing is the team. I always tell everybody I'm the least important person on my team, right? They're the ones who are doing the actual work. So a lot of it is really nurturing the careers of all the amazing people on my team, making sure that they're clear on what they need to do, but still providing that area for them to grow and to own projects and to really own technical solutions as well. Whereas I'll just provide a point of view, they can take it or not. So that's the sort of team management, career, mentorship aspect of things. And then another big part of it is really, I spend a lot of time educating about AI. And when AI burst onto the scene a year and a half ago, there was a huge amount of just, it's cool. How do we use it? What is it? What's happening behind the scenes? And a lot of what I do now also is really around education of non-technical people as well as technical people as to this is what AI is, this is what generative AI is, here's what large language models are, here's what retrieval augmented generation is, here's what fine-tuning is, here's where all of these different buzzwords that are thrown around, here's how it all comes together and how both technical and non-technical people can use AI in their day-to-day. So a lot of different aspects, but it's really just leading the conversation and the strategy around AI.
Oh, that's fantastic. So as you said, leading the strategy, being a mentor, working with users, working with internal staff, educating them. In terms of the field of AI, Nandan, changes is evolving so very fast. I mean, you talked about how you spend some time. How do you and your team stay up to date? Because this is one of the questions about why should they come to Palo Alto Network? What are the opportunities to stay up to date on some of these technologies and skills?
Yeah, I think that the pace of innovation in the field of AI is unlike anything we've ever seen before. It's not just daily that there are new techniques and research methods and all that stuff that comes out. It's hourly. And there's also a huge sense of FOMO in this field, right? Where if somebody is doing something, then everybody else wants to do that. And a lot of what we see is that a lot of people are publishing papers and writing blogs and really doing some super cool stuff, but a lot of it is largely the same. And there might be very slight differences. And so what we try to find is what are the things that people are publishing that really can move the needle? And so I sit down with my team and we look at, okay, here are all of these different innovations that have come out in the past week, let's say. Which of these do we think has the potential to really have an impact on how we do AI here? And then we implement them. We have a super robust testing framework where we have a set of questions that we know what the answers are. We know these are important. We know that whoever the end users of these AI models are going to be asking these questions. And then we implement this new innovation that has come around and we see, okay, it went from 50% accuracy, let's say, to 55% accuracy. Cool. That's a big increase in the field of AI. Let's go and implement this. And if we do implement it, then we can then, you know, allow everybody at the company to use these techniques. And so by building out this really robust testing harness, testing framework, we're able to quantify the value of each of these innovations that comes out. And then really figure out from there, where should we really be spending our efforts, right? If something barely moves the needle in terms of accuracy or whatever metric we care about, then forget it. But if something really moves the needle, all right, well, we're going to invest in it. We're going to build out a scalable solution. We're going to deploy it as an endpoint for people to hit. So that's really how we do it. I let my team really drive the innovations. And we've been super intentional to build out a way of quantifying how good all of these new innovations that come out are.
Nandan, can you share some insights into the challenges and opportunities that you encountered while building an AI ecosystem?
Absolutely, yeah. And this is one of the areas that I'm I'm super passionate about. So I'll give you the highlights so I don't speak for a week to you about this. And the main, one of the really interesting areas, especially as somebody who works in cybersecurity, is around open source models. And we have both challenges and opportunities here, because open source models are amazing when you need to do something that stays on-prem. And what I mean by that is, if I'm doing a developer productivity tool, something to help my software developers, I can't be uploading proprietary product source code into these models, right? Because what happens if that gets leaked? That's an existential threat to my company. So instead, you may want to do something like deploy an open source model on-prem where the model, the data, doesn't technically leave your boundaries. And so in that way, open source models become a super interesting both challenge and opportunity. Opportunity where you can build out a super robust, very specific, very personalized large language model for your own purposes. Challenge, because now it's a hard thing to do, right? It's a hard thing to deploy your own model. How do you get the GPUs? How do you get the resources? You often need to fine tune these models. That can take weeks, if not months, to do. It's super expensive. So I think open source models are a super interesting area of both challenge and opportunity. I'll give you one more area of challenge and opportunity. I think that's really around developer productivity, right? And so this is something that I'm super interested about, which is, how do we empower software developers to go from zero or idea to delivered code? Right now, it can maybe take a week, a month. How do we get that down to minutes or hours? And through AI, you can actually do that, because you can build your own AI model out there that's fine-tuned on your entire code base. And then you can just query for a very straightforward approach and workable code to what you're trying to solve for. So the challenge there is to actually build out that AI model to do that for you. And the opportunity there is that if you can do that, you have a massive increase in efficiency and productivity. You do have another big challenge there is around hallucinations. How do you stop hallucinations? How do you make sure that what you're actually building works? So yeah, really interesting areas of opportunities and challenges. I think, just to end on this section, right, I think one of the really interesting things about large language models is how they're priced. They're priced by token, which, as somebody who's been in the field for a while, it's a little hard to wrap my head around how to get, you know, in my mind, I think models should be free. But at the same time, I understand that a large language model has taken months, if not years, and tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars to train. And we need to think about large language models less as a model, even though it's in the name, and more as a product or a sort of software as a service mm-hmm. that you ping. So yeah, challenges around cost, but there's also a massive opportunity around benefits and value that are added there as well.
Nandan, cybersecurity is a critical domain where AI can really have a significant impact. What are your thoughts on how do you leverage AI to enhance cybersecurity solutions?
I think cybersecurity is such an interesting field for AI. One, because it opens up this massive new attack surface for bad actors to use. All of a sudden, if I'm a bad actor, I can rapidly create novel threats in minutes. And in the past, it would take me maybe months to do that. So instead of having this long lead time to create threats for bad actors, you can actually do that super quickly. You can translate these across a bunch of different languages immediately. And so it's an amazing tool for bad actors if they know how to use them. At the same time, on the flip side, that then provides an opportunity for cybersecurity companies, because now you could think about what other products can be created around AI. So one is putting AI at the heart of products and really, you know, building out AI models and using AI to proactively detect and stop threats that come in. The other side of it, though, is that as AI becomes more and more relevant, you need to think about this from a enterprise perspective as well. And what that means is, I don't remember the exact company, but when ChatGPT came out, some employees at a company had uploaded proprietary source code, and it was trained on that proprietary source code, and it was leaked, and it was a massive issue. Mm-hmm. So the way that enterprises use AI, and basically every enterprise is using AI at this point, the way that they use AI also becomes yet another attack surface for bad actors to exploit. Because as an enterprise, there's very little visibility into what data is actually uploaded into these models. Is it source code? Is it proprietary and confidential customer support documents? So I think that there's yet another interesting avenue for cybersecurity companies to take, which is just around visibility. There's a saying in cybersecurity that you can't stop what you can't detect. And we're in this new field of AI where there's so much to detect, and people haven't really figured out how to do that. So there's any possible way you could think about how AI is used, that also always opens up a backdoor in the sense for it to be exploited as well. So it's a super interesting field. I'm super excited to see what the industry as a whole comes up with, both using AI to stop bad actors and how bad actors are using AI to be better at their jobs. Stay tuned. Super interesting stuff coming out of the field.
Deputy National Security Administrator in the Biden administration, Ann Neuberger, said that AI is the biggest threat and the biggest opportunity for cybersecurity. Yep. Do you think the opportunity can be more than the threat, Nandan, or we don't know yet? Is that right now?
I think it has to be. If the threat becomes bigger than the opportunity, then we're in deep trouble, right? I think it's on all of us as a society to make sure that that isn't the case. Thankfully, there's a lot of really amazing work happening in the open source field around how do we deploy models that have guardrails in them that stop them from being abused by bad actors. Super interesting field as well. And I think as a society, we really need to come together and make sure that AI is used for good and not for bad.
So really, the onus is also on the society as to how this happens, Nandan. Nandan, explainability and transparency are also crucial considerations in AI systems, especially cybersecurity. How should one approach these aspects in your view?
Yeah, that's a super, super good question. And I think it's something that everybody in the field is racing to answer. I think that for large language models, they're a type of neural network. And all neural networks suffer from the sort of black box syndrome, in the sense that it's very difficult to figure out why a prediction is made in the way that it was made. And there are a bunch of really interesting techniques, specifically using probing, where you turn off certain neurons selectively and see how that changes outputs, or you build models around various aspects of the architecture. But the reality is that large language models, which at this point is the foundation of what we're calling AI, large language models are fundamentally non-deterministic, which means that when you ask the same question twice, you may get different results. And think about that in the broader context of neural networks, which is that they're already almost impossible to explain. Now you add in another layer of complexity, which is that if you get it right and it explains one instance, you ask the same thing, it might not get it right in terms of explainability. So there's it's super interesting. I think it's one of the massive roadblocks that we need to overcome in order to build towards transparency and trust of these models. There are some amazing companies out there who are tackling this, and I'm sure it'll be solved in a scalable and accurate way. But right now, you're correct that it's a very, very difficult thing to solve, and it's one of the more pressing concerns with what we have. Again, this is one of those stay tuned things where, again, some really big companies out there are trying to figure this out. There are techniques there that work for specific instances. People are just trying to figure out how do we scale those techniques to work across the board so I can always have a track of how these different predictions were created and why they were created in that specific way.
So a lot of work still in progress, Nandan. Nandan, how does one strike a balance between, you know, leveraging AI for enhanced security, as you said, the opportunity, but also protecting user privacy and data rights?
Yeah, again, super, super relevant. And we're right in the middle of this super interesting battle between who actually owns their data. And it's been something, again, that's been around for a while, and we've kind of just been kicking the can down the road. But this is where the rubber meets the road, right? And we really need to think about who actually owns their own data, and how do we ensure that the models that are being built, fundamentally, they get better the more data that they have. So how do we find that balance between the best possible models we can create, but also respecting people's privacy, understanding that people might not want the questions that they're asking these models to be something that they're trained on. I think Europe has already created a framework for this, a blueprint for this, and they're doing super well. I think it's something that needs to be adopted globally. It's a very difficult balance to find. I think I personally err on the side of consumer privacy and making sure that whatever data somebody has sits within their own box. And if they don't want their data to be used for training, then that shouldn't be used. There's also the other end of it, right? Where if you are a famous person, some of these models will be trained on your work, whether you're an artist or an author or whatever. And then how do we make sure that if that artist doesn't want AI to be recreating or to be creating outputs that are in their style, how do we make sure that we don't allow that as well? So it's an input and an output thing with large language models. And it's something that is top of mind and something we need to just be super careful with as AI practitioners.
So we really need to be super careful about that. How about making sure that we work on responsible and ethical development of AI? I mean, is that a consideration for you, Nandan, as you're, you know, doing what you're doing in terms of AI innovation?
Yeah, it's front and center. And it's something that we all need to be really careful of. There's a few ways to think about this. One is bias, which occurs usually at the training data set. How do we make sure that the biases that are inherent in almost all training data sets are removed so that we have the most fair, consistent, and accurate models at the end of it? That's something that as AI practitioners, we need to be very, very intentional about. That's kind of the beginning part of it, right? I always think about things left to right as input, model, output. So input is how do we remove biases from training data sets? Output is really how do we then ensure that the large language models that are being used, that are being created, how do we make sure that they're being used in a responsible and ethical way? Very, very difficult question. And I see you haven't given me any questions, so we'll have to talk about that after. But it's a very difficult question because we can only control what we can control. What somebody does with a large language model, while we can try to restrain that, there's always going to be ways around that. And so you need to make sure that the training data that you have is unbiased and that data is ethical. And then in your licenses and terms and whatever of these models, you make sure that legally people can't be using these for things that they shouldn't be used for and for things that may harm society overall.
Oh, that's great. So just making sure that we are very cognizant of that. Nandan, as you are, you know, building this AI ecosystem, how do you assess the business impact and ROI of some of these AI systems or programs?
To me, AI is a tool, not a product. So how you were measuring value before is how you should measure value now. And let's take, for instance, everybody's favorite example of generative AI, which is the customer support use case. It is one of the most widespread use cases, and it is one of the most successful use cases. So your goal, which is usually increased customer satisfaction, decreased cost, decreased time to resolution, these metrics, those should all stay the same. It's just how you get there that's different. The investment, the I in ROI, will go up with these tools because generative AI at this point is expensive. That should be offset by the return, so the value of these right side metrics. But really, in my opinion, AI should be used to facilitate and enhance what you're already doing so that you can get, instead of 5% better in terms of, let's say, CSAT score, customer satisfaction, you're at 25% using AI, right? And it might decrease operational overhead because you have an AI model serving documents to customers instead of a person. So there's a bunch of different things in the equation that changes, but the equation itself should stay the same. The ultimate end goal should be the same. The way that we get there ultimately changes.
Great. So you said it's a tool. Ultimate end goal should be the same. Just the way we are getting there is a little different, and maybe more efficiencies. Nandan, when you are in your AI ecosystem, do you have interdisciplinary collaboration, and how do you engage with other? This is for people who are going down this path and they think, hey, man, Nandan's job seems so cool. I want to do that. Is there interdisciplinary stuff, other engagements? Tell them a little bit about that.
Totally, yeah. So there's so many different use cases in AI. But almost always, the people building the AI tools and models and processes and workflows aren't the end users. The one exception there is really around developer productivity, where you have the software developers both building the models often and also using the models that they build. But everything else, for the most part, you have different stakeholders, you have different people with domain expertise, different people with knowledge and expectations. And again, AI is one of those things that should facilitate those conversations with these stakeholders. But it's not something where that should be the only conversation. So again, let's take the customer support use case. If you asked me and my team to build out, say, a customer support chatbot, and you put us in a box, we would build out a horrible customer support chatbot because we don't know the intricacies and nuances of this domain. We don't know the documents, the input documents. We don't know the day in the life of a customer support rep. We don't know specifically, you know, what the, at this tier of service, what the promised resolution time is. So while we can bring the technical expertise, and we do, we still need to partner with all these other stakeholders, let's say in our customer support org, to figure out, to actually frame the problem, to figure out how do we get from point A to point B? What is that point B that we should be aiming for? So the collaboration with teams that are not part of, or that are not AI engineers, is the single most important thing, because those are going to determine what does success look like. We'll figure out how to get there, but what does success look like? What do these documents that we need to ingest look like? What does our ideal customer look like? What does our non-ideal customer look like? So to really paint the frame, set the environment, set the ecosystem, set the expectations, set the success criteria, we always lean on the business stakeholders and the domain experts there.
So work with domain experts, work with the users. It is just a tool for them and by them and off them, is what you're saying, Nandan.
Yep, exactly.
Nandan, this is for folks who want to look at Palo Alto Networks as a potential opportunity for them to, you know, look at as a, you know, career. The question they had was, how do you foster a culture of innovation and experimentation within your team?
Yeah, I think that's a super key aspect of this. I think people always want to do interesting work, and that's something that I really strive to ensure that my team is doing. It happens to be that generative AI is interesting for a lot of people, which is great. Really, for me, though, it's a people-centric organization where my door is always open, and people, I really encourage people to come to me with new ideas. And I'll give you an example of we're trying to build out some AI tool, and we found that one of my team members came to me with this idea that they found on X/Twitter. Literally, it was posted 2 days ago, and it was around how do you figure out the most relevant examples to use for few shot learning in a prompt. And we sat down there, we read the post a few times, and then we implemented it. And it's super successful. It's something that is now being used across the enterprise in all of our architectures. And that's the thing with AI, right? There's no textbooks for you to go to at this point about these things, right? The resources are so decentralized, which is difficult in some ways, but amazing in others. And so really it's people driven. It's making sure I listen to my team. They spend a lot more time reading articles and stuff than I do. And then it's really about, let's sit down, let's figure out, are these ideas cool? Are they new? And then let's implement them, right? My organization is very flat. So if you want to talk to my manager, please, you know, if you want, it's a very, very non-hierarchical organization, and you'll see, you can go and create a meeting with the CEO today if you wanted to. And so I think that really empowers people, to make their own decisions and to innovate themselves, knowing that, hey, we have your back. If, especially in the field of AI, if you build something and it doesn't work out, that's completely fine. We've learned that it doesn't work, which is just as valuable as learning that it does work. So it's really around setting the tone as leaders at this company that it's okay to fail. We're really interested in innovation, and the 10 failures that you might have to lead to the one success, I guarantee you that one success will be worth it.
Fantastic. So open to experimentation, open to ideas, flat organization. You can go to Nandan's boss or even get a meeting with the CEO. Well, maybe that might be a little too much, but that's a great innovative culture. So mm-hmm. the follow-on question from them was that what qualities are you looking for when you're for your AI team, Nandan?
I think the single most important characteristic is really around curiosity. It's around, do you care about AI as a whole? Because if you don't, then it's difficult for me to get you to care about the work that we're doing. But if it's interesting to you and you're reading papers in your free time and some weekends you spend building out a RAG-based chatbot for your family trip to Yosemite the next summer or whatever, right? That's super interesting to me. I think curiosity and interest is one big bucket. Another big bucket, at this point, if you're interviewing on my team, I assume you have the technical skills. If you don't, it becomes evident very, very quickly. But we kind of just take that as an assumption, especially based on experience and all that stuff.
Of course.
So that's kind of, that's an assumption.
That's table stakes. That's a table stakes.
Yeah, I didn't want to phrase it like that, but yeah. And then the other really valuable skill that I think is often overlooked is around executive communication, because especially in the field of AI, which is so new, a lot of leaders don't really know what it is or how to think about it or what the value can be, all that stuff. So being able to explain technical concepts to a non-technical audience, to me, is unbelievably important. It's something that I don't necessarily expect of my more junior team members, but as people rise up through their career, it's something that I expect them to learn and to hone in and to become super good at. My nightmare is people building all these AI models that just sit on the shelf. I would much rather people build even worse quality models that everybody uses than people build super high quality models that nobody uses. So being able to actually articulate the value that they bring becomes so important, and it's also something that we hire for in more senior roles.
Oh, fantastic. So table stakes, obviously need to know AI, if, you know, that's just a given technical, but curiosity. Hey, man, if you built a RAG tool for going to Yosemite, or you built an agent to get to your plans for Italy and having the super agent do that for you, Nandan's going to be damn impressed. And obviously executive communication, where you can build a decent product but get buy-in so that it doesn't sit on the shelf, is what I think Nandan is saying. That makes a big, big difference. Are there opportunities for, let's say, when these people come in for reskilling, upskilling also? Because as you know, things change. And what are the opportunities here?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that there are an unbelievable amount of resources online for people to become proficient with AI. We now live in a world where there's the vast amount of resources and classes and all these things that you can do to learn online, whatever your learning style is. They're at such an abundance that it's mind-blowing to me, and I love to see that. So people can, of course, upskill or reskill themselves on their own time. There are, of course, internal resources for employees where there's a whole Learn AI program that people can take. And it's, to me, it's really about how do we match your current state of where you are to where you want to be. Often that requires learning AI more technically, or maybe learning the product management side more technically, or whatever it may be. You can take the onus and do that yourself with all these online things. That's amazing. Of course, here at Palo Alto Networks, we'll also support you if you want to do that internally. All these amazing programs and courses and all the support that's needed is there as well.
Lots and lots of opportunities, as long as you're curious and you want to learn. Nandan, you've had an amazing journey. What are some of the key lessons you learned in your journey so far? And what advice would you want to give to organizations that are looking to establish an AI head or a chief AI officer and build out AI capabilities? We have a lot of Fortune 500 CEOs who listen to this. So what advice would you give them?
I think the best thing that you could do if you're a CEO of a company that's looking to hire an AI leader is ensure that there's buy-in from the top down. There's buy-in from the CEO down on an AI mission, an AI charter that this leader can come in and execute on. Of course, there's going to be room for opportunities, for innovations, for them to own it themselves. But there at least needs to be buy-in that, hey, AI is this super expensive thing that's happening. We don't know how well it's going to work. But, you know, whoever comes in as the AI leader, we're going to trust you and we're going to allow you the opportunity to do it. And to try it out. And if it doesn't work, then we'll iterate on it. We'll figure out ways to make it work. So just that full-on trust and backing is the most important thing. I think that there's also often a culture of skepticism towards AI, just because of its newness and the fact that, you know, I mean, I should say Gen AI, right? Just because of Gen AI's newness. And the fact that it is a risk. And so really building that buy-in from everybody at the company is really important. The good news is that it's really easy to hire for because it's so interesting. People will be knocking down your door to be working on AI projects. So that's awesome. I think also ensure that the data that will be used for AI is of the highest quality. There's the old adage, I'm sure everybody can repeat it with me, garbage in, garbage out. AI doesn't fix that, it amplifies that. And any issues you have in your data become right at the forefront when you start building AI models on top of them. So before hiring an AI leader, hire a data leader and make sure that they understand this is the data that's important, we're making sure it's high quality, we're putting all the instruments and systems in place to make sure that we have the data in place to make whoever this AI leader is going to be successful as well. So that would be my advice to the people who want to build out an AI function in their company.
Wow, great advice. Make sure there is executive buy-in from the top down, because patience will need to be done, according to Nandan. This is something new and it's expensive. Secondly, make sure your data is right. If need be, get a data ahead of your data before you bring on a head of AI. Mm-hmm. So those are great messages and insights from Nandan for our CEOs who are listening in. Nandan, looking ahead, what are some emerging trends do you see shaping the future of AI in cybersecurity?
Yeah, I think that there's a few super interesting things. The first of which is really around multimodality. And by that, I mean moving from just text to text, images, videos, sound bites. The goal of large language models is to fundamentally understand language, right? Large language models. And they do that really well. We've seen that. But think about how much richer of an understanding these models can get of these various topics when you introduce pictures, when you introduce images, when you introduce sound bites. So we're at the point now where we're seeing really interesting results from multimodal models, specifically around image creation and video creation. But building that into the actual core architecture of these models becomes key. And it's not just at some of these models that I've seen are you're kind of just bolting on image creation capabilities, building it out at its core. So it's fundamental. We've seen that with a few vendors and it's super, super impressive. So I think that's one thing. It also allows for agent architectures to be way more rich in terms of what they can do, because right now it's kind of just summarization and creation of text. If you can then, you know, do videos as well and all these other things, it becomes much more valuable. So multimodal models is one. That's a tongue twister. Two is really around scaling input sequence lengths. And this was an issue in the past. It's become less of an issue now. But the very first round of some of these large language models, you could use 8,000 tokens, which is like 6,000 words. For so many of these use cases, you need massive inputs because you're often either putting in your entire code base, you could be putting in, marketing documents, marketing decks, sales videos, all that stuff. So how do we think about making it so that there is no input limit on these models, whatever the cost of that will be? That also requires a fundamental change in how we build the architecture of these models. And I've already seen some research papers that are knocking on the door of this, and they're mind-blowingly awesome. And I'll end with three, which is really around something I was talking about earlier, which is the non-deterministic aspect of models. So if I ask the same question multiple times, I'll get different results. That's, to me, something that is very valuable, but it's something that should be able to be turned on and off. Where if I want to be in a creative mode and I'm trying to write my new novel, then I want that turned all the way up. People call that temperature, but again, that's a parameter and needs to be inherent in the model. As an enterprise, I want to make sure that if a customer comes to me with the same question, they get the same response. So how do I inherently make these models, give these models the ability to be deterministic when I want them to be and non-deterministic when I don't want them to be? Again, I've seen some super interesting research papers coming out in that field as well. So those three areas are if we can nail those, then I think we're well on the way to AGI.
Wow. So as Nandan said, three areas, deterministic, non-deterministic, multimodal, you're absolutely right. We are on our way to AGI if we get some of these enlarged input windows, as you said. I think that would get us there. Nandan, last thing, and I know we are on a tight time frame. We have a lightning round of quick questions. Just answer whatever, and these are your personal views. Any resource that you recommend, a newsletter or something on AI for our listeners? One resource.
Go to ARXIV and look at all of the new research papers that are coming out. Find one, read it, and enjoy it.
Great. Nandan, cloud-based AI or on-prem AI?
Depends on the use case, but usually cloud-based.
Supervised learning or unsupervised learning?
Supervised all the way.
TensorFlow or PyTorch?
Oh, that's like asking me to choose my favorite child. We'll go with TensorFlow on this one because it was the first one I've ever used.
Okay, great. Well, Nandan, thank you so very much. This was such an insightful conversation, Nandan. We've gained such a deep understanding of global cybersecurity, its future, and how to protect our digital way of life, and the ethical considerations, and the challenges that are faced by chief AI officers. And you just nailed it in so many ways. And we really explored about the human AI collaboration and, you know, crucial aspects like explainability, transparency, and bias mitigation. We are really left with a clear vision of the future of AI and cybersecurity. And Nandan, thank you really for your time and really look forward to continuing this with other chief AI officers. Until then, to our listeners, stay curious and stay informed. Nandan, thanks so much. This was fantastic. I had so many more. Maybe we'd love to have you more, but I can assure you after this, you're going to get a lot of people applying to you, people who have done RAG models, people who have done agent models on Yosemite and others. But this was fantastic. Thank you so much, Nandan.
Bring it on. Thank you so much. Appreciate the time.